Okay, good to go. I'm ready. Sorry.
No. This is the regular meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1 Board of Commissioners. It's Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. It's 5:30. This regular meeting is held remotely under COVID-19 emergency rules. The public can call in at 509-824-1884 and enter 613-629-377-POUND. I'm going to call to order. If anyone from the public does have a comment and they're having a hard time getting their audio to work, you can go ahead and email Nathan Butler at butler@sjcphd1.org if you wish to comment. Secretary Butler will now call the roll.
Yes, good evening. Commissioner Clary.
Present.
Commissioner Lehman.
Present.
Commissioner Lindstrom.
Present.
Commissioner Lachine Seitz.
Present.
Commissioner Loring.
Here.
And then we also have Superintendent Hutchins.
Present.
And Chief Kutzing.
I'm here.
All present. Thank you.
Now we move to approve the consent agenda. Are there any amendments to the agenda this evening?
This is Commissioner Loring, and I do have a lot of amendments.
Sure.
To minutes 10. And
Kyle, you can you repeat what you said? Sorry.
Yes, am I not coming through well?
No, you're good now. You just cut out when you said the date or...
Okay, great. It was the June 10th minute, and it was in reference to my concerns about that letter that went out to the fire district. And I actually don't have that on one of my screens right here. But basically my concern that it did not represent me, and I just wanted to be clear, I think I stated a little bit of a broader concern than that, and I just wanted that to be captured in the minutes if possible. And so that concern, I believe I objected to sending a letter that was revised with a small material point, though, after a consensus had been reached about that letter by the board and without the opportunity for the board to confirm whether they agreed or disagreed with that change before it was sent out. Also, as stated there, thank you. Is that Nathan? You're all over it.
Yeah.
And thank you. Yeah, and also the revision didn't represent my position. I felt that. But there was a little bit of a broader concern about material changes to documents that have already been agreed to without the follow-up opportunity to agree to that change.
So how would you like that expressed in the minutes then?
Well, let's see. I think I would add this. Commissioner Loring objected to the transmission of a board letter that was materially revised after a consensus was reached by the board and without the opportunity for the board to confirm agreement with that revised letter before it was sent.
I didn't quite catch all of that, sorry. It was just a little too fast. You can see where I'm at.
After a consensus was reached by the board without the opportunity of the board to confirm agreement with the revised letter before it was sent. And you could also have left the revision. I did state the position that it did not represent my position. So that other statement was true as well.
Does that mean with your approval?
That's my recollection, and also we might want to make sure that others feel comfortable that represents what happened as well at that meeting. Thank you, Chair Lindstrom.
Okay.
And thank you, Mr. Butler, for drafting and typing that so quickly.
No problem.
So do I hear a motion to approve the amendment and to then...
I make a motion to approve the amendment.
This is Commissioner Lehman. I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
It sounds unanimous. Okay, and then do I hear a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Great. Nathan, were you able to catch all that?
You know, I got most of it. I didn't hear who seconded the consent agenda, but...
Gail.
Okay. Okay,
all
I
right.
Got it.
Just a reminder to anybody that's on the line to, or if you have muted yourself, to please mute yourself. And at this time, I would like to welcome Linda McCarthy, who's the Executive Director of Mount Baker Planned Parenthood.
I thank you for inviting me tonight. Nathan is going to drive, and I'm going to talk.
Give me just one moment here to close out what I'm doing and open up the... If you want to start talking, I'll bring it up.
Thank you both for your support. It makes a world of difference to us to provide services in the San Juans. And, you know, in the last couple of years, since we've had support from the hospital district, it's really been helpful.
Well, at least on my behalf, thank you for providing the services you do out here. We really appreciate it.
All right, so here we go. So we are Mount Baker Planned Parenthood. We're one of 49 Planned Parenthoods in the country, and we serve Whatcom, Skagit, and San Juan counties. Go to the next slide. Actually, it looks like I can drive here. So you want me to just try that? I'll take control and see what happens.
Give it a go.
You can bail me out if I get in trouble. Here's a little snapshot. We were started in 1969 as the Family Planning Association of Whatcom and became a Planned Parenthood in 1970. Moved into Skagit County in 1980, and then we've been in San Juan County since 1995. It's a long time. This is an image of where we are on Reed Street. It's a great little location. It's literally down the street from where we started our clinic over there. So there are three parts to the Planned Parenthood stool. We do medical services, education, and then we do advocacy for our issues. These are the services that are available at Mount Baker Planned Parenthood. On the left side are services that are available in Friday Harbor. As you can see, it's a range of birth control, cancer screenings, STI testing. We do pre and post-exposure prophylaxis. We do lots of different gynae care, family planning, wellness visits, menopause, and then pregnancy testing and options. And on the right side of the screen are additional services that we provide in our Bellingham or Mount Vernon health centers. But our patients come off the island for that. And for those of you who don't know what colposcopy and loop are, those are leap. If you have an abnormal pap, you would then get into what we call pap follow-up, and some of those abnormals are minor and will have just changes. They might be an infection or an injury, and others will progress into dysplasia and potentially cervical cancer. And many years ago, we actually had a patient that died of not being able to access to get an affordable colposcopy and biopsy, so we started doing those services, and then we discovered that our patients, when we found them to have severe abnormality, couldn't afford the next level of care, which was this LEAP procedure. We implemented that as well, and if you go beyond that, then we're referring you to a gynecological oncologist, and you have a pretty serious problem. But the way we do these services is that we include the laboratory fees, the biopsy fees, in with the services, so that it's pretty affordable to patients. And it's a shock for our patients, or any patient, when they get a pathology bill that's, you know, twice as expensive as the procedure. And so we drive a deal with the lab, so we guarantee the bill payments with the lab, so we have a much better rate, and that way we make sure that our patients get the care they need, so they're never told, you know, with a abnormal path that you're on your own. So we do see some patients from the islands that come off for that, and we have a board certified OB-GYN who does that service for us, Dr. Dowling, and she's employed by Peace Health in Bellingham. She's their chief of staff right now. So let's see if I can do this right. Oh, it worked. Here's a preview of a couple of services that we're adding later this year. We're gender-affirming hormone therapy. We provide that in Bellingham and Mount Vernon now, and we're training our provider over in Friday Harbor to offer that as well. And then we are launching a behavioral health program, and our goal is to do that via telemedicine. We are advertising as we speak for a social worker who will then be full-time on our staff. We have a lot of patients that are struggling, and they were struggling before COVID, and they're really struggling now, so we're very excited to bring that service in-house. And we received a grant from the North Sound ACH that allow us to get the setup we need in Friday Harbor, so that patients can come in and we'll be able to provide that service remotely as well. So this has been a lifelong dream of mine to get a social worker, so I can hardly stand myself. I'm pretty excited about that. So this is a little snapshot of 2019. Again, we're one of 49 affiliates across the country. We served 9,054 patients, and it's always a surprise to people to know that we serve so many men. We used to laugh that they were in the parking lot, then we got them into the waiting room, and now we get them into the exam room. So it's a growing number of our patients. So we saw that our patients come in for 14,891 unique visits. So, and this is a question we always get asked, you know, how many abortions do you provide? And last year it was 617, which is about evenly split between in-clinic and medication, which is provided at home. This is a little snapshot of how those visits roll out. I have a bar against the Friday Harbor number, but I think it's 257 visits. And so you'll see that we call them our Papa Bear Clinic is in Bellingham, our Mama Bear Clinic's in Mount Vernon, and our little baby bear clinic is in Friday Harbor. And so it's a small portion of what we do, but it's really important work, because as you'll see, we see a lot of people that are struggling financially, and they could not afford to go off the island, which is why we're in Friday Harbor, because that came to us many years ago as a demand. And this gives you a snapshot of the zip code. So the bulk of the patients that we see in our Friday Harbor Health Center are from Friday Harbor. 21 of them are from other islands, 10 are from Washington State, somewhere else, and then 9 are out of state. And as I've mentioned before, we don't say where they're from, so that we can maintain their confidentiality, because if we listed some of those zip codes, people would say, that's my granddaughter or my grandson. So, but the primary number of patients is Friday Harbor. These are our patients by age. So the outside circle of the circle in the pink are the Friday Harbor patients. So you can see that we saw 20 patients that were 17 and under. We saw 16 that were 18 to 19, 36 that are 20 to 24, 37 that are 25 to 29, 40 that are 30 to 39, and then 27 that are 40 plus. And this is pretty much, as you can see, the numbers between the 20 to 30 age is our big bulk of patients, and it's no different here as well. And then this is how people pay for their bill. So Medicaid is a big source of revenue for us, our patient payment. Self-pay is actually the biggest in Friday Harbor. And that means these folks that we're seeing have no insurance, and they are put on a sliding scale, and we subsidize that, and a great deal of them are subsidized fully. And then insurance covers, you know, a portion of them, but that's, you know, it actually gives a false picture, because so many of our patients have high deductible health plans that they have not met their deductible. Most of them never do meet their deductible. So we have a internal policy that if you use your insurance for the few cases that, you know, you do get insurance, that's great. But if you use it and it goes to deductible, we don't penalize you for using your insurance. So for example, we would drop you back on the sliding scale. So if you had no insurance and you were going to get free service and you have insurance and it goes to deductible and you have to pay, we would drop you to free service. And or we put you in our lower category. So in the case that insurance does pay, that's helpful because it pays more than the sliding scale. And in the case where it doesn't actually pay, we don't burden the patient with paying us. We put them on the slide, and they get a double benefit because then they get that goes to their deductible, and we then put them back on where they belong. And you can see here the look of what we're talking about. So 51 of our patients had income up to 100% of the poverty level, which is $12,490 for an individual. Those patients pay nothing. Those services are free. The next category, the next category of patients, which is the largest, are in the second up to 150. I have a little bar in front of mine, so it's not helping me. See, that is a group pays on the sliding scale. So for an example, they might pay $20 for a visit. And then it includes their family, as you can see above, so they're making a little bit more, up to 150%, so their income can go up to $18,000 if they're a family of one, or up to $38,000 if they're a family of four. And family is defined as however they want to call that. And then we go up the scale here. Again, I can't read my numbers, but for patients, and we encourage patients that actually have ability to pay or have insurance to come in to Planned Parenthood. It's sort of a come back to Planned Parenthood to help us and do that. And we're seeing more people from Friday Harbor that are taking us up on that. When we go out and do some presentations, we talk about that. You know, you can come here, you can get great care. All of our care is evidence-based, and we're overseen by a board-certified gynecological expert. And so we help offset the cost of the low end and our reimbursement by having folks come in and see a nurse practitioner who's Debbie Owens. She lives on the island. So these are just a selection of some of the services. So that 216 STI tests in our Friday Harbor clinic, 328 family planning services, 47 pregnancy tests, 26 cancer screenings. And we don't provide abortion, so zero. But so the cancer screens, if you're wondering why that's low, it's because, again, we provide evidence-based services. So it used to be that you had your first pap smear at age 18 or at the time that you became sexually active. And now it's age 21. And it used to be every year, and now it's every 3 or 5 years. And it's all the public health rules that they put into place, and so that is why the cancer screening numbers are down lower, because they don't have to have a pap every year. But that includes cervical cancer and breast cancer screening, and we do also testicular exams if men come in and have a concern as well. So this is a look at the STI testing that we did last year. So we did 216 tests in Friday Harbor, and two of those tested positive, so tested and were treated or chlamydia. We didn't have any gonorrhea or syphilis tests, but, you know, quite frankly, those are both gonorrhea and syphilis are rising numbers that we've seen over the last few years. I'd say 5-6 years ago, we hardly saw any, single digits. And now they're a growing concern, especially the gonorrhea, which is some of that is medication-resistant gonorrhea. So we test and screen all of our patients and then treat them for that as well. This is a bit about the pregnancy test. Again, an abortion care that we provide, 47 pregnancy tests. None of those were referred for an abortion last year from Friday Harbor. And people are doing good prevention. And then this is a formula that the federal government puts in place. We have no control over it. It comes out every once a year. And what they do is they crunch some numbers in the background and they look at family planning's impact and what they're looking to see, how many births were averted, how many abortions were averted, and how many miscarriages were averted by use of reliable contraceptive methods. So as you can see here, again, you're pink on the outside. In the birth category, either births averted for under 19, so for teenagers, we averted 6 unintended pregnancies and births, and then 9 for over 20. And for abortions, it's 6 for the teen population and 9 for over 20. And then for the miscarriages, it's 2 and 2. And overall, our organization averted 1,670 unintended pregnancies from occurring, which is very positive for health, especially now in COVID. And here's a look at our expenses from last year, I mean our financials from last year, and I cannot read that bottom line, but we did have a We did have a profit last year of $9,000, which is unusual in the clinic. So the years that you see the big profits, I can tell you what they're related to. So in 2019, we were defunded by the federal government. And that defunding caused a push of donations. So the Title X program, we had to choose between staying in the Title X program or not. And then the other thing that related to that was we turned 50 last year, and we did a year-long fundraising campaign and had a donor match of our first time ever having a donor match, and we put that out through all of our 3 counties, and we had tremendous response from our friends, and so we were brought in significant. If you look up, we raised $24,970 in fundraising last year, so that was pretty remarkable for us. We were very proud of that. It was the first time ever, and the first time ever we raised in a not a calendar year, but a campaign to campaign year, $1 million. So we're like doing the happy dance. So that is my presentation. I'm more than happy to answer questions, and just want to put a place mark on what we're looking facing right now. So the as we all know, COVID has created havoc throughout the state of Washington. There's a $3 billion deficit, and both the Department of Health and the Healthcare Authority manages Medicaid. We're required to put in budget exercises for a 15% reduction. So we were kind of stunned that Department of Health's response was to put in a, their highest cut was in family planning, was recommending a $2 million cut, which would be devastating. And then the Healthcare Authority recommended terminating state-funded abortions, which also was surprising. And quite frankly, that one's illegal because the state has a law in the books that says it has to provide equitable pregnancy services. But so we are waiting, as like everybody in the state is, to see what those cuts are going to do for us and how we're going to manage them. And everybody's struggling in COVID year, and we are no different than that. And our patients are terrified. On the other hand, they're desperately not wanting to get pregnant because pregnancy is one of the highest risks for being COVID positive. So it's been quite the challenge, and they're coming into us for what we call them LARC, long-acting reversible contraception, IUDs and implants, which are more expensive. And so it's a perfect storm. So I just want you all to know how grateful we are for your support. And to give you a snapshot of what this year looks like, I asked our finance person to run our financials through May. And through May, we have a $4,249.64 deficit in Bridie Harbor. So it's a little bit different from last year, but we'll figure it out as we go, because that's just what we do. We're committed to being in Bridie Harbor, and we really want to support the folks that really need us in the San Juan Islands. So, but we just really want you to know how grateful we are for the subsidy that the hospital districts have provided. It's made a world of difference to us, and it's, yeah, on behalf of all the patients we serve, thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions. And
thank you, Linda.
Okay.
Any questions?
I would also like to say thank you very much for the service you provide and for all the years you've been here, because it is a much needed service for our community. So thank you.
Yeah, we've tie it all together with a shoestring, but it all works. So, thanks again. And, you know, I'm around if you have any questions later on, or also when the COVID crisis is over next year, I look forward to meeting you all in person and thanking you in person. So feel free to call on me anytime if you have any questions, and I'm happy to answer to them and to do what I can to and continue to improve the health in the San Juan Islands. So.
Thank you, Linda. And we should also let you know that Peace Health awarded us $5,000 more in terms of what they give back. So we'll be deciding as a board. I know we have a contract with you for $20,000 annually, but we'll be looking to vote to revise that probably at our next meeting.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for thinking of us. And like I said, anytime you have questions, I'd be here for you and happy to do that. And like I said, I look forward to meeting you all in the future. And I just want to also acknowledge that Pamela and Nathan have been wonderful to work with. So I want to appreciate that we feel supported by, you know, you all. So thank you very much. Have a lovely evening. And I now can say I've done Teams. It worked. All right, you guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. So we do have a contract with Mount Baker Planned Parenthood, but as with PIMC, we need to vote to approve the funds to be sent. And we need to do this even though we still need to discuss the allocation of the new funds and the old funds. So any changes to funding, we need to reach out to Chief Kutzing and discuss the $5,000 that we give to community paramedicine. And we need to reach out to Cynthia at the Prevention Coalition and talk about her needs as well. So, I think we should maybe look to doing that in the next month. But at this time, I think we could make a motion to send the $20,000 for the first half of 2020 per our contract for Mount Baker Planned Parenthood.
I'll move.
Okay. Lovely. Do I hear a second?
Seconded.
I will second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm seeing all affirmative there, Nathan.
Who is the official second on that, Chairman? Chair Lindstrom.
I think it was Trish.
Trish.
Sounds like someone's vacuuming.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we move on to the audience participation portion of our meeting. Members of the audience can press star 6 to unmute. They should announce that they'd like to speak so we can generate a list. I want to remind everybody we have 15 minutes for this and we have 3 minutes per person. We do kind of have a long meeting today, so we're going to try to stick to that. And I believe Nathan had, we all received a letter from Dan Paulson this week, which I believe everyone read, but Nathan has been asked by Dan to read it at the meeting. So I will let, should we start with that, Nathan, and then allow others that are on the line to speak?
Sure. Yeah, that's okay. Fine. I'll go ahead and read it, and then we can ask if there are people who want to speak. Let's see. How's the volume? Can you guys hear me okay?
Just fine.
Okay. So this is Dan Paulson. Dear board members, you have now agreed to hire another consultant to study another plan, further delaying the process of integration with FHIR. I believe this is completely unnecessary, a waste of time and taxpayers' money, and another step in avoiding the work and effort needed to continue with the process. I have heard the following concerns from several of you as cause for you halting the integration process and offer the following observations. First, a few of you stated that San Juan Fire and Rescue will have to take over the current EMS building liability as well as the impending lawsuit. Before you make public statements and demands or use this as an excuse to halt the integration process, you should check with your attorney on these two items. My understanding is that, one, you are responsible for EMS. The lawsuit was initiated under the PhD's oversight of EMS, and therefore the PhD is responsible. I don't see how this legal action could be transferred to another entity and therefore should not be a factor in halting the integration process. Parenthetically, he adds, previously, attorney Richard Davis told the board that the lawsuit is not transferable. You are responsible for the current EMS building as well as the land, unless you legally sell this asset to San Juan Island Fire and Rescue. The Citizens Advisory Group never expected the fire district to want this building. The logical approach would be for the hospital district to sell the building and land to Peace Island Hospital, which is already short of space. Second, another stated reason for you dropping the integration process was that you were not receiving combined projected EMS and fire budgets going out 3 years. Yet the PhD board has never had a long-range EMS budget going out 3 years. Did you provide written documentation for this? Did you consult with the fire commissioners? The budgets are all county records and you can simply get these online. The integrated EMS fire budget is primarily a fire district issue. Third, 5 versus 3-person boards. As a CAG member, I was involved with this recommendation and the intent of this was to attempt to have an EMS or emergency MD person on board. By law, this cannot be mandated, and you are well aware that with your 5-person PhD board, you don't have a single person with this qualification. After careful consideration and further conversations with other agencies, I no longer feel that...
Nathan, I'm going to interrupt you because it's been 3 minutes, and we've all read this letter, and I've had multiple phone conversations with... Mr. Paulson, I would like to move on to another public comment, please.
Okay. Are there any members of the public who would like to comment? Please unmute yourselves and announce that you would like to comment, but don't begin commenting. If we have a list of people, that will allow us to go orderly.
Okay.
Again, you can press star 6. I did receive notification from one person that they might like to comment at the end of the board meeting.
Okay.
But that was it, and I don't hear anything.
Okay, great. I'm sorry to cut that short, but we have a really long meeting, and we've all read the letter, so you know, we'll address some of those issues when we talk about integration later in the meeting. So now we hand things over to Pamela Hutchins, our superintendent, for her operations report.
Okay, thank you. We did pretty well in May, considering we're still in the middle of the pandemic. We had total receipts of $123,220.85, and of that, $109,532.26 were property tax revenues, and this was actually a 2% increase from May last year in our property tax. And year to date, we are up 3% from last year. So right now, we are holding steady and doing a little bit better than last year. And that's good news, considering we are in the middle of that pandemic. We had a few timber harvest taxes of $20.91, and we also got refunds from San Juan Island EMS for half of their expenses that they owed us for our 2017-18 audit. So we got $6,141 and $7,525, so that will be applied on our side for paying some of that back, so the audit expense will look a little bit better on our budget. And our cash balance for May is $852,410.98, and this also is up 3% from last year at this time. So again, we are doing well with our money and our budget. Disbursements, we had $17,162.07 just in accounts payable for May. And for year to date, we are 1.5% lower in our expenditures than last year at this time. So we are doing good on expense-wise also. Did anyone have any questions on any of the financial reports you were sent?
Nope. I don't.
Okay. I'll move on to operations. Of course, in May, we did have that special meeting on May 8th that essentially made up for that missed regular March 25th meeting. We also found out that Governor Inslee extended the ability for us to continue to have remote meetings only to July 1st, 2020, and his office is telling us that that is the last extension for that proclamation of being able to have the meetings July 1st, 2020, so we'll see if they can stick to that.
Pam, can I ask a quick question about that?
Sure.
Would there be a variation on that if we had if we had a quorum, like three commissioners that were comfortable meeting, and then we maybe had two that were feeling like they were uncomfortable? Could they use Teams to meet with us? Would that preclude us, do you think?
I think there's an opportunity to do several different ways.
Okay.
I've got a quick thought on that. This came up about a month or two ago, and Pam and Nathan, if you can make sure I'm accurate about this, but I believe that the commission itself could meet remotely, but that we would have to have a physical space for people who want to attend.
Correct.
Wouldn't there have to be one commissioner in the space, though, where the public was supposed to be?
I don't believe so. Obviously, okay. Somebody has to be there to operate the meeting and conduct it, and to connect everybody together. But I don't believe any of the commissioners would have to be there. So the least we could have would be one person.
Okay.
Could be a commissioner, presumably, if somebody were willing to do that. or it could be somebody else.
Correct. The five commissioners would not have to be there, but we would have to have like Nathan there or myself or someone to be there to run those proceedings. But so we'll, you know, be looking at that, you know, closely. Today is the 24th, so in all likelihood, our next meeting will be under new rules, so we'll have to, you know, look at that. So,
can I add a comment, Pam?
Sure.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Let me just add from a technical perspective, it's easier if the commissioners are either all present or all absent. So, you know, the degree of, to which the technical sophistication is just more challenging if there are like two people present and the three others aren't, that kind of thing. But we will work to make whatever you guys want happen. It's certainly doable. It's just worth noting.
This is Gail. As Carl mentioned earlier, too, we also take into account what Frank James says. So if we can't have more than five people in a room, that's going to be an issue in that space. But we'll find out more, right, about what that, how that actually is going to work.
Yeah. And actually, by that time, we may have gone 3 weeks, and maybe we might have moved to full phase three, and if that happens, then we might be able to have a larger number. So, yeah, so we'll just have to see as we go forward what we have to do.
Okay, thank you.
I wanted to make a note that I think it was Monday, we received notice from Peace Island, Peace Health, Peace Island Medical Center, that Mary Ann King would be retiring from her CEO position. Her last day will be July 17th. So she has been there at PIMC for, I think, about 8 years. So we want to thank her for all of her hard work, especially during the pandemic time and getting the hospital to where they need to be. And also when we move from phase to phase, the hospitals in our area that have to give us letters ascertaining to, you know, certain aspects to move. So that's also a big support, you know, for them to constantly be ready for kind of an uptick. So we really want to thank Mary Ann for all of her work. And I think it would be nice for the district to send a letter of congratulatory and well wishes on her retirement. I believe she is going to move out of the country, and where her husband is from, and so she'll be moving far, far away from us. So I think we really should have a letter from the district. If
you
like something that you could draft for us. That. Yes, I can draft that and send out to all the commissioners.
That would be good.
And in relating to that, Chuck Prosper, the CEO of the North Region of Peace Health, also said they were looking at a replacement for the Peace Health PIMC position for Mary Ann, and that they were looking at someone to be, you know, competent from their side and also to be island appropriate. So I think it might also be nice for the district to send Mr. Prosper a letter encouraging him to make sure that the island appropriateness is really, really important in the decision, because our island people function different than on the mainland and the corporations over there. So I think that would be great just to, you know, give him a little reminder and if there's anything that we can do to help, to just let us know.
Sounds good. You might want to know what you mean by that, so be prepared to answer.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Commissioner Loring. I was going to say the same thing. Be very careful, maybe, about how you communicate that, because it could mean many different things to different people, and I certainly wouldn't want it to appear exclusionary in some way or another.
Okay. I was just...
That's not what you meant. Let's just be careful.
No, I just wanted to reiterate his thoughts that they were looking for someone that fit the island to, that we agreed with that. And just, yeah, well.
Very important. And you're not wrong. Yeah.
So if y'all would like for me to draft that letter, I'll do that also.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then let's see. Lastly, there's been, we had voting on meetings of having Daphne Snyder to help us with the district strategic plan to do a mission, vision, and value statement. And I purposely put that information on how important that is in my operations report, and it is on the district website, so if people don't understand what that is about, they can go to our website and look at the full paragraphs that I wrote about that. But I just wanted to reiterate that in the time now for our hospital district, we have never had a mission strategic plan, and we are in the middle of a pandemic. We only have San Juan Island EMS right now. We're talking about integration, then leaving the district, and it is vitally important that the district look now at what our district stands for, what we want to go forward with. We also have a brand new board, 4 brand new members, and it's important. If you go and Google why have a mission statement, you get lots and lots and lots of answers, and they all tell you that it's important. There's been research done that organizations that have them are more successful. It just gives a starting point and something to look at to make sure as you move forward that you are applying and that you can have something to assess whether or not you need to do certain things. And we have been fiscally responsible. We've set a limit on what we were spending. We set up Saturday morning sessions too, so Nathan and I won't be out of the office. We'll be doing it on Saturday mornings. So we're doing it that way. And it has nothing to do with postponing talks about integration. These are 2 separate things, and we can do both at the same time. But any organization that really wants to be successful these days, they all look at themselves and do a mission, vision, value statements. All of the big corporations, all of our organizations around us, all the fire districts, all the hospital districts do it. So we are not wasting the taxpayers' dollars. We are, in fact, looking out for now and in the future for the hospital district and how it runs. So I just wanted to put that out there and so that people understood the importance of this. And I'm really looking forward to working on this. We've tried to work on this about 2 years ago, so even before integration. So this is an important process, and it will help us now and in the future. So thank you for voting to do that. And that is it for my operations report.
Thanks, Pam. Thanks for that explanation. I know from being on the board for a couple years, this is something that we've said we needed to get done, and we just had never gotten to it, so it's long overdue. And compared to other sort of strategic planning, this is a fraction of the cost. So I'm glad we're moving forward as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess if no one has any further questions for Pam that I hear, we'll move on to the operations report with Chief Kutzing.
Great. Thank you, Commissioners. Pleasure to be here tonight. I know that we've asked Dr. Corsa to be part of this discussion as well. And I'm not sure he's on the line yet. I kind of wanted to open that up to him if he were available.
He's not on. Chief, this is Nathan. He's not on yet. He gets off at 7, I think, and we actually thought that some of the other parts of the meeting would take longer. So, but we can, sure. The board told him that they would clear time when he came on. So.
Okay. Well, then I will just proceed. I will forge on ahead. Just to kind of give you the highlights of the operations report that I submitted to you last Friday. Hopefully you've all had a chance to take a look at that. There were no substantive changes from the draft that I submitted. I want to just hit some of the highlights for you, some of the statistics for the department. 102 runs for the month of May. Basically, when we look at year-to-date compared to last year, we have about a 12% decrease in the number of calls that we have going on. Our shoot times are hanging around 2 minutes to 21 is this average shoot right now for this particular month. Things that I'm hoping that we can kind of work on, it takes into account. We do have our one EMT who's usually on staff. The COVID response model is still there where we oftentimes have two. I'm hoping that we can get that time where the ambulance wheels rolling, bring that down. There are times when we're only dealing with one EMT on and we have to wait for one of the volunteer responders to show up, and that kind of cuts into that to that rapid response time. When we have two EMTs on, our response times are looking much better. Of course, the gold standard, 90 seconds. We want people out the door, and if we can have wheels rolling in 90 seconds, that's what we're shooting for. But right now, our average shoot time is 2 minutes and 21. So there's room for improvement, and we'll keep working on that. Just our response times, which are different. Response time is from the time the page goes out until we're actually making contact with the patient. Our overall response time for the month of May was 8 minutes and 47 seconds, and that includes all areas of the island. Of course, our benchmark is 20 minutes, given that we're a rural community. Actually, that's the suburban benchmark. 91% of our calls were done within that 20-minute benchmark, 68 under 10. Again, we're shooting for that gold standard. We'd like to be under 10 minutes to get to any place on the island. That's obviously going to be challenging when you go all the way down to the end of the Cape or all the way out to Afterglow or White Point, but we'll keep striving for that. That pretty much is the statistics kind of summed up. As far as our finances go for the month of May, we're 42% into the year. Revenues for the month of May, $184,106, brings our cumulative total to $1,224,000 and some change, which is about 48.1% of our projected budget. So we're a little ahead of schedule in terms of revenues collected. Our expenses for the month of May, $157,000 and some change, which brings our cumulative total to $968,550, which is 34% of our budget. So we're a little under budget, our projected. So I'm happy about that. GAMT revenues collected are lagging. We've only got about 17% of what our budget projections were. Nothing to be alarmed about yet, given the overall revenues and expenses, I think we're still pretty well on track. Our cash and reserves show up at about $2 million. We have about 10 months of operating expenses. Please note that the reserve fund has been reactivated. The funds have been transferred, but that does not show up on the May reports. We should see that that transfer of funds come our next reporting period. And so we'll be able to kind of take stock in that and kind of keep moving forward and see where we are in terms of being able to supplement those reserve funds, how we're going to apply those as we keep moving forward. The other thing that I want to mention is that we have heard from the Public Employees Relationship Commission, and that they have ruled that the full-time staff EMTs do in fact qualify to be represented by the union, and so we can start moving forward on a collective bargaining agreement, whether and just how we're going to amend the bargaining agreement that is in place to make sure that the EMTs are represented as well. Rich Davis says that he figures that we'll be in contact with the union representatives very shortly, and we'll start setting up time so we can start moving forward on that. But nothing scheduled solidly yet. In terms of operations, we're still continuing with our COVID-19 response model, where we're trying to make sure that we have the EMTs staffed on the ambulance at all time, limiting our exposure of our regular volunteers, therefore keeping them safe and keeping the community safe, trying to limit the number of responders who are out there in the community right now. Part of our plan is to watch where the county is moving. The fact that we're moving, we've made applications to the modified phase 3. Our plan is always to kind of lag a couple of weeks behind to see if we get an uptick in cases so that we're ready before we change our deployment model. So that kind of puts us there about mid-July before we'll kind of take a look at it again and say, do we go back to relatively normal response?
Would you plan to change your response model at phase 3? I mean, what are you anticipating there?
Not quite at phase 3. I think we'd wait those couple of weeks and see if we get that uptick. If we say if everything's holding solid, then we may stand down that COVID-specific shift and just go back to our normal type of response where volunteers can sign up for shifts or they can keep their pagers on if a response goes out and they can just respond to the nearest appropriate place, whether that means the scene or coming to the station to man an ambulance. We'll just kind of go back to a more normal type of response that we've been doing previously. We did meet with the North Region EMS and Trauma Council. I'm not sure, Commissioner Seitz, if you've heard back from the executive director. Not yet. Okay. And I have not heard either, but again, what we can do is hopefully get Commissioner Seitz onto at least the response list so that she can join via Teams, or maybe next time we actually head over and physically attend that North Regional meeting, we'll make sure to tap in, have you come along with us. Right now, Lady usually goes, as she's on the executive committee for the North Region. I serve as the alternate for the pre-hospital seat from San Juan County, and EMS Chief Helen Riggins over on Shaw serves as our representative for the pre-hospital position with the North Region. They've opened up their grants, the North Region that is, their process for grant requests. Their submittal date is September 25th, so we're looking as a county on what kinds of submissions we may make to the North Region to see if we can get some grant money. Usually those things go for equipment or education, training, things like that. So that'll be discussed in the next few weeks with the county, EMS and Trauma Council, and the plan moving forward is that the county would make their request, a unified request to the North Region, and we'll kind of proceed from there. We'll make sure and keep you all informed as to what that looks like. Another note, we've reworked our operational teams. We have been running with a three-team model where our volunteers are then have officers, volunteer lieutenants, or staff EMTs who also serve as lieutenants as kind of their go-between liaison. We start to look at that and realize, all right, we've got 4 staff EMTs, we have 4 medics, we have 4 remaining volunteer lieutenants, we have 4 people who serve in a support role, maybe we need to listen to the numbers and go with four teams. So that's kind of what we did. So we've revised our organizational chart that's further on down the agenda, but we're going to move to that four-team model. Each team will have one of those representative groups, and then about six or seven volunteers who will serve on those teams. It gives us a better span of control. I think it's a little more representative, and we've also tried to divide people geographically as well. So if we've got a team that is, you know, mostly people who reside in the north end, that may come in handy down the road. It also gives us some flexibility for training options, where we can train in smaller groups. We've made very good progress in terms of getting all our skill sets done and taken care of, so now we can move it into more scenario-based and training, and we can modify those team by team and get some more personalized training. People have been very responsive to that. Our community paramedicine, we have basically initiated a work group to start looking at some of the issues that are confronting us all throughout the North region in terms of looking at ongoing funding is obviously our primary concern. We want to also make sure that we have policies and procedures in place. We are not alone in not having anything necessarily codified. There are no rules at the state level in terms of WAC or RCW. This is brand new territory. So the word has kind of come out, and this is through a collective meeting through ACH, the North Sound Accountable Communities of Health, that we've kind of put together our this working group of actually providers, representatives from the South Snohomish County, North Snohomish County, Whatcom, San Juan here, and trying to figure out where we need to move forward. Mike Hilly, who is involved with Whatcom County, has kind of taken the lead on this, and the idea is that we're going to start to propose some rules, some of these policies that we can then take to Olympia, take to the State Department of Health, and start to codify these things and make sure that we're covered under the rules section. The State Department of Health right now just doesn't have the bandwidth to create these by themselves. So they're looking to the providers to actually give them some templates and some guidance how they want to move forward. So that's our plan moving forward. Our small within agency work group is also going to be working on that. We've got four folks that are involved with that. Laney Volk, who's obviously running the program right now. Kyle Davies has expressed interest. Heather Vogel and Peggy Long kind of round up that group. And so we're looking at those four individuals, and I will help as I can to try to get our thoughts together to draft some policies, some procedures, bring that forward to the regional group, and then hopefully get that down to the state. And it's going to take a while because there'll have to be some legislative action eventually. But the more that we can codify and have this the pieces in place, work with Dr. Corsa, who is very, very interested in moving community paramedicine forward, I think we've got some good things in the wings and ready to keep moving forward. Again, the biggest issue is sustainable funding. I'm so hesitant to offer positions or get people ramped up and say, yeah, well, we had that for a year, the funding's done, thank you for your service, let's move on. Would rather have those funding issues taken care of first before we start to ramp up that program any further. So that's kind of where we are with that. We did hear back, I reached out to Attorney Jim Fredman, who's handling our civil investigative demand. He says that he has had no response from the State Attorney General's office to date. Figured that we'll kind of wait for this the COVID-19 situation kind of settles down a little bit more before he reaches out to him again. So basically where we are is we received a letter from the Attorney General. We drafted a response to that letter that we received, and that went out back in November of 19, and since then, no word back from the Attorney General's office. So that's kind of where we stand with that. The other thing I believe I talked a bit about our COVID-19 situation. The good news is we had thought that our case number, I believe it was 16 or 17, was at Village at the Harbor, found out and just kind of ramped up over this last weekend to try to get every resident, every staff member tested. We worked with the County Department of Health. We then also had a couple of people, myself, Heather Vogel on one occasion, Lainey Volk on another occasion, go out and so the County Health Department was doing the actual virus testing, and then we as EMS helped the staff get fit tested for their N95 masks to make sure that they were wearing the right masks, that they were fitting properly, and they could respond that way. We got about 12, 13 individuals, staff members, fit tested. They got all the residents tested, and just word today that everybody came back negative for the virus, which is including the first positive patient. So, not sure exactly what that means. If it was a false positive, if the virus had run its course in that first patient, and now the virus is no longer present, I think the next step for that particular individual would be serum testing to see if they do in fact have antibodies and confirm that it was a positive case. We're still treating the village as a hot zone for right now, meaning we want to limit the providers going in. If any resident needs transport, we're hoping that they can be brought out to the ambulance and that we can do any assessment within the ambulance while we're en route to PIMC. That way we're going to limit exposure for those residents. We don't want to bring anything into them, and we certainly don't want to bring anything out to our providers as well and then out to the rest of the community. But the fact that we have negative tests, I think, is very, very encouraging. So we'll just keep moving forward that way. That's what I have for you, and I am happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's good. I want to just say that yesterday I had the financial meeting with Heather, and I was really happy to see that Peggy was joining us, and I'm always glad to have more people with more eyes on things, and it's nice to have more support, so I'm pleased to see that. I did have a couple things I wanted to bring up about things with the budget, and just I noticed that there was sort of a high number reflecting the cashing out of PTO, there isn't a specific bars code for that, and I don't know if the county can create one for that, but it seems like we either didn't anticipate the demand on PTO being cashed out, or we need to just adjust the percentage, and perhaps it needs its own line rather than being included in wages. And that was just my thought process, and I wanted to touch base with you on that.
No, I agree, and I think part of that is we kind of relied on what had been done in the past, and I think that as we looked at PTO versus vacation time versus sick leave, it wasn't calculated correctly. And we need to totally, with PTO, which is personal time off, we've lumped that all together, holiday pay, sick leave, vacation time, all into one category.
Right.
That's kind of where we were. It seems quite obvious, you know, as we have these high numbers, the PTO has been earned, it has been approved, it should be cashed out, but we need to account for it differently. And so that is definitely something that we need to rectify moving forward and to adequately take care of while within our budgeting process. So yes, I am glad that you spotted it. I spotted it as well. I got a yellow highlighter here on my my spreadsheets, and it should be fixed. And the other thing that we keep seeing too is the insurance one always kind of jumps out at me. Vehicle insurance, and it's because it's in three different places. Insurance is in three different places, but as it's been paid out, it keeps getting put into one bars code. So we have to fix that. We have to modify, either we consolidate insurance payment into one bars category, or we do the ledger entries to make sure that the payment we gave to the insurance company is broken out to the proper parts categories. So those things need to be dealt with.
You're talking about the Reliance standard that had the change in coverage and
Looking more at the building insurance, the vehicle insurance, because that one is, you know, if you look at the expenditure status report, it shows up as something that seems way out of whack on
page. You're talking about the vehicle insurance that was totally out of whack. Yeah, I also, you know, Heather and I also talked about the life insurance having a change in coverage and a change in charges.
That was in there as well, but it wasn't quite as a glaring over budget kind of thing. So reallocating those into the proper bars code is something that we definitely need to be working on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because we're going to look at revising the budget in July.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We'll be able to have the data from June, and then we can either do the ledger changes that we need to plan to revise the budget moving forward, and then that helps us kind of plan for the 2021 budget as well.
Okay. Those were my questions. Does anyone else have any comments on the budget or anything that Carl had to say?
I do. I've got a couple quick points. Chief Hootsing, it looked like the charges for May were quite a bit higher than earlier months. Is that pretty standard, though, that as we get into the summer, we'll start to see more calls and then charges attributed to them?
The revenues coming in, you mean?
I was looking at I've got it up three screens here. Let's see, the annual collection statistics, mm-hmm. and we're in notes for May of 2020. It shows the charges there, and then it shows the collections, et cetera. And it's just, it bumps back up. And look, is that just this is a normal time of year to see that?
Yes. Oh. Yeah. We have more volume, more, you know, traffic coming into the islands. And, yeah, our summers tend to be busier. We have a slow start, then a big uptick, and then we slow down again at the end of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I did have one thing on the civil investigative demand. Have you had a conversation with Mr. Fredman, I think it was, on how that might match up with integration and the timing? I certainly understand that you don't necessarily push the state to move their, you know, investigation forward, or you don't necessarily want to probe after we've already submitted a letter in response to their letter about it. But at the same time, have you talked about timing of resolving it as it works with other activities that are happening with EMS?
You know, I haven't specifically done that. I do know that we took and we created our own reserve for what the initial ask was for restitution and kind of separated that out. So that's allocated for within the budget. How that would then transfer forward to any sort of integration or pass through if we do that in terms of within the hospital district to handle that before we, you know, any other funds are allocated and pushed forward. But I have not asked the question specifically. That we're covered.
Okay. Yeah, no, thanks. It'll just be part of the conversation. Just good to know where we stand with that and do we have the money planned and what to do with that at some point then.
Right.
Not that we know exact amounts, but at least we can anticipate some of that based on the demand that they sent.
Right, and I think, you know, what we had planned was, since this was the initial ask, it was, you know, the letter we received from the Attorney General said negotiation. Generally, within a negotiation, you start high and then you work down. So we allocated what the initial ask was, and hopefully, you know, there were threats of higher penalties if we didn't cooperate, but we're cooperating. So I think we made the right choice in saying that was the initial ask. We'll set that money aside. If we got it right now, we can take care of it and move on and get it behind us. That's, in fact, what we're advised to do with our attorney.
Okay, thanks.
Absolutely.
Thanks for noting as well that there was a higher number that had been proposed. So it was kind of hard to tell whether they already negotiated themselves down a little bit or where they are. But I think that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Are we ready to move on?
I believe so.
Okay, thank you so much, Chief Kutzing. Let's see, Dr. Corsa has not arrived yet, Nathan?
I don't think so. I haven't seen him come on. Yeah, I'm checking right now and I don't see him.
We now move on to unfinished business.
I sent him an email and just told him to speak up when he got on the board and make time for him.
Okay, sounds great. So this is committee reports and discussion, and our current committees, I'll just go through the list and people can chime in if they have things to add. We have the Off-Island Transport Committee. Anything to offer? I don't think anything happened. So.
That has not met.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the CCC, nothing going on there, I don't think. EMS and Trauma Care Council, Carl touched on that a little bit already.
I attended a meeting, and there's a report on that from, was that from you, Carl?
Yes, it was.
Summary, okay. Yeah. Not much happened there, but where's the local one?
We just touched on the CID. The Finance Committee is Everett and myself, and I don't have much to add there. We kind of covered things a little bit. Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation and Long-Term Care, Gail and Trish. It's been hard to work on things, so I don't know if either of you have anything to report on that.
Well, we aren't officially on that committee, are we? And is it meeting?
Are you talking about the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had any notification about that.
When there is a meeting that requires the district representation, then they let us know. But they haven't met. There hasn't been a meeting where that's required yet. Yeah, we're still waiting on notices for the second grant that we applied for. And that first one, the planning grant that I reported, that one we didn't get as a mail. So, but when there is a meeting where I will let each of you know.
Thank you.
Community relations, I think Trish and I continue to try to reach out to the public, and when we get an email, we try to call and follow up. I believe we've been on top of that, at least on our end. And, you know, as far as we have the Integration Steering Committee crossed out with me and Everett, but I think I should report that Everett and I did meet with Commissioner Jarman this morning, and we had a pretty long conversation, and we agreed that we need to talk about the road forward, and that he asked that I put together an agenda, which I believe Kyle already has, thank you, Kyle, an open public meeting with the fire department. So, and then once that's complete and to our satisfaction, we'll send that on to Commissioner Jarman, and we'll work to find a time to get together that all works for all of us, and depending on meeting rules and how that all works during this strange time, we'll work on that. So I think it's important to note that we have opened up dialogue, and we're working on it. Everett, did you have anything you wanted to add based on our conversation today?
No. What struck me after the meeting is that this is something that has been missing from the process. The people or boards need to meet. They really, really are are the boards that will bring this integration together, not necessarily the steering committee. This felt, for me at least as a new commissioner, the first step towards actually doing that. So I was very much encouraged by that, as well as Commissioner John's attitude, and was very helpful. His letters have been that way, stating their position, and I think we cleared the air on a few things that needed, it felt like a positive meeting to me.
Okay.
It may have been me. I unmuted. Sorry. Thanks, Commissioner Lindstrom. I'm sorry. So, did we have a general time frame for a meeting at this point, or were you saying that is a waiting agenda review?
No. All we agreed on was just to get an agenda put together and then talk about dates in the near future that we could meet. So, you know, I think the sooner the better, in my mind, but we didn't set a date necessarily. We'll continue to work on that.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, let's go ahead and send that draft agenda
over there as
soon as you can, since it's been ready for a while.
Nathan, do you want to take care of forwarding that on for us?
Either myself or Chief would be suitable, I think. It doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
Are we talking about the document that's titled a discussion plan?
No, the agenda that Kyle came up with. And I think when it comes to that sort of thing, I've mostly communicated that to the other board, but I've generally CC'd members of the steering committee, and I'm not really sure what to do in this situation, since we suspended our part in the steering committee. I'll forward that email to all of you. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah. And Nathan, I haven't seen that draft agenda yet, so please send it to me, and I'd be happy to forward it.
It's been a while. It was a few weeks ago. You may have seen it and forgotten about it or something, or maybe it didn't get to you.
At the last meeting we had.
Yeah, it was a while ago. But I'll send it to you again if you want, and you make sure that... Why don't I send it to the whole board, our board first? If anyone has any comments, tell me, and then I'll send it off to the other board when you guys are happy with it. Does that seem reasonable?
Yes.
Okay.